Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod
Yourself a Gun,
a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We are very excited to have you all here listening in. I was told by Vince that most podcasts at the very end of the episode encourage people to give it 5 stars in a review, but we're not most podcasts, Vince.
So I'm gonna
do it up top because people forget, and you know, they listen to the whole thing, they consume for free, and then they're just like, oh, I don't need to do anything for these guys, fuck them.
I just want to be like other people.
I don't want to be like other people. I want us to be different. I want us to beg for validation right up top.
Yeah,
that's how I choose to live
my
life.
Statement out of the way at the beginning.
Yeah, so, you know, go ahead and do that, because I've been asking at the top of each episode for, like, the last 5, and it's not really been helping a lot. People, you know, are like, no, I won't, so I'm just going to keep doing it until one of you decides to do it. All right, Vince, I'm very excited for today's episode.
You are?
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually very excited to talk Sopranos, but today our guest often talks Sopranos on his own podcast, Chapo Trap House. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is Matt Chrisman.
Hey, hey.
How you doing, Matt?
Oh, I'm vibing.
Yeah, you're vibing right now? Fuck oh, yeah. Yeah, that's an early vibe. We just got started and you're already vibing.
Well, yes. I mean, I try to keep it at a simmer at all times. Right now it's bubbling a little bit.
Damn, your baseline is vibing. Holy shit.
Bodes well for the rest of the cast.
Sure does. So, Matt, you are a Sopranos fan, am I right?
You know what? I'm becoming more of one with time. I never was a huge one because I was right there at the sweet spot to be a Sopranos super fan when it first came out.
Yeah.
But it just never really grabbed me. Not like, say, Deadwood did or The Wire. Right.
Yeah.
But it's really going back and rewatching it, especially as people have talked about it, and you know, and it become memeified, specifically my co-hosts, specifically Felix, making Sopranos sort of a watchword. It made me look back and watch it again, and with some time, a lot of the stuff that I guess I wasn't really noticed at the time because I was sort of feeling suffocated by the real sort of the visual gloom of the show. I think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Have cuts through now. Like, and I'm just astounded by how culturally prescient and insightful that show is. And of course, because of that, how hilariously funny it is.
That's funny. Like when Deadwood came out, I had such a hard time getting into it because it's so like fucking theatrical. It feels like the drama kid like swearing hour at first.
Yeah.
And
oh no, totally. I get that.
Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And everyone has like a different weird accent, but you know, a lot of good performances in that show.
Yeah, I never finished Deadwood, and I feel bad because I was such a fan of David Milch's other show, John from Cincinnati.
I have to watch that someday. One of these days, I'm going to just watch that because it's only got a season, and I'm just going to blow through it in a day and see what my brain feels like after that.
I barely remember. He was like a surfer or something. What was that show?
Apparently, it was an allegory for the Iraq War. That's what David Milch said. And yes, it's about a mysterious surfer from Cincinnati, known for its beaches, who shows up in a California town and he's like sort of a mysterious messianic figure. And the whole thing is apparently about George Bush and the Iraq War. And I definitely have been intrigued. I just never got around to it.
I never got that from watching the show. I was just kind of, I was in that sort of lost phase of TV viewing where you're kind of hoping that there's an answer for everything, you know, and it was just one of those shows where I was like, well, certainly this is all leading somewhere. I mean, it's incredibly mysterious.
That's John pre-Lost finale TV watching right there.
But yeah, no, they canceled it. Nothing ever happens. And he just John's a guy who talks, but only in phrases that he hears other people say. And it's very confusing, and there's some incest in it, and it's very weird. But yeah, I tried watching Deadwood, but yeah, it was too theatrical for me too. Also, at the time, I was doing my own share of Balls of Dope, so I was just like, this show just makes me want to do more opiates. Yeah. So
where's Mr. Wu at?
I need to get that fucking connect, because that guy's got all the balls of dope.
Who stole the fucking dope? Cocksucker!
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Before we just dive right in, it wouldn't be Pod Yourself a Gun if we did not play the theme song. You woke up this morning. Pod Yourself a Gun. Your mama always said you'd be there. Chosen. Pod. Pod. Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
I have to say, that song, it certainly didn't help me get enamored of the show.
I've
been baffled by that song and why it's there.
Classic Alabama 3 tune, who, you know, about having a blue moon in your eye, which we've all had at one time or
when
another.
A blue moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's Sopranos.
I gotta say, like, one of the things I love about David Chase is how fucking bad his musical taste is, and it kind of comes through. He's got some hits in there, but... The theme song especially, and then a few episodes ago we did the mashup of like Henry Mancini and Sting. Holy shit.
Yeah. No, he's kind of he's got shitty Tarantino vibes with his music choices, or like a shitty Scorsese. Like, I think he thinks it helps cinematically, but a lot of the times you're just like, why did you choose this? And this episode is actually no different. It actually ends with a song sung by Steve Van Zandt of what is it, E Street Band fame. And it's not good. It's just
I thought it was a deep cut of Rolling Stones at first until I Shazammed
same
it.
It is Lil Stevie, and it's him singing, which I'm impressed by the fact that it doesn't sound like Sil singing, although I'd be down.
That might be better.
Yeah. So today we are going to be talking about, from season 3, episode 12 of The Sopranos, Amour Fou, or Amour Fou. I don't know how to do a French accent. Amour Fou. Which premiered May 13th, 2001. Vince, give us a little bit of the HBO Max synopsis.
Inspired by a tale from Ralph about how his father got made, Jackie Jr. decides to make his move in organized crime by instigating a robbery caper at a local card game. Reminded by Melfi of the psychological parallels between his relationships with Gloria and his mother, Tony finds it harder and harder to spend time with his crazy love. I think that's the most sarcastic quotes we've ever had in a HBO Max synopsis.
Yeah, you get the feeling that people writing this these synopses, that they're starting to really resent their job. After a while, they're just going to be like, more mafia bullshit. Tony wants to fuck his mom. What do you want from me?
Yeah, I feel like the journalism used to be more boring, and so there used to be a lot more pun headlines, because it was someone who just, you know, they're desperate for any sort of creative outlet of any kind, and so they would just put it all into the headline pun. And we don't really have that now, that everyone's just writing frivolous shit all the time, and I kind of miss it.
Speaking of frivolous headlines, though, Vince, I think, and by the way, that was a good segue, so
yeah, great
don't you fucking scoff at me. Vince, I think it is time for us to take a little trip back to what was happening at the time that this episode came
out. That's right. We need cultural context. So we're going to find out what was happening on May 13th, 2001, when this episode first premiered.
Walk, walk, teddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoe, bop, remember then.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
Got to get that record scratch in there. Yeah, so headlines on this day included from the New York Post. This was a fun one. E-shopping, an idea whose time has come again? Because it was out of fashion and now it's back. Here's an idea. Quit your fancy jobs at Goldman Sachs and set up a website to sell Palm Pilots, other consumer electronics, and sometime in the future, other stuff. No, it's not 1997. It's MarketBoy.com, which quietly launched 3 weeks ago.
MarketBoy?
MarketBoy.com.
Jesus Christ, that sounds like today that would be dark web and you could only buy Market Boys on Bitcoin. You know?
That's where you got your adrenochrome. out of sheer curiosity, Bullseye called R. May Lee, 39, who quit her job as COO of the credit derivatives business at Goldman, just as the NASDAQ tanked a year ago. The voluble Ms. Lee and Market Boy's president, Kazimir Wierzynski, 30, a former senior derivatives trader in the emerging debt markets group at Goldman, believe they have the winning business model for e-tailing. Shoppers sit at their computers and bid on items as if they were buying securities. Bids and offers, just like the pros. Users log in once and browse by product. They can pay full whack or haggle.
What the fuck? Market Boy.
Market
so
Boy.
This was eBay, but worse?
Yeah, sounds like it.
Okay.
There's also a What I Watch segment from the Post, which had Jamie Lynn Sigler from The Sopranos.
Oh, Meadow.
Yeah, Meadow. And her response, friends, the writing is so clever. It's great. I laugh through the entire show. I'm a big fan of Chandler. He's my favorite character.
Is this written by a bot?
Matthew Perry is very talented.
I mean, you know, the all true.
Sure.
All true.
Could he be any more talented?
other things that happened, Perry Como, dead at 88.
RIP to a legend.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Or 87, according to the LA Times, who got it wrong on the front page somehow.
Blew it.
Which is a fun thing that I discovered.
They've always been a trash paper. Go on.
The Ali G Show won Best Comedy at the British Academy Television Awards.
Okay, rightfully so. Badass.
And Silvio Berlusconi's coalition won another Italian election.
That's a spicy meatball.
Oh, cowabunga bunga. Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Fucking Berlusconi. Remember when, like, Berlusconi's rise to power was the biggest embarrassment in the West? When yeah. We were just like, oh boy, this guy.
Before we all got our own, everybody gets a Berlusconi.
Yeah.
I still got to say that clip of him where he's just, like, walking down the street and he sees a meter maid, like, putting a ticket on a car and he goes behind her and pretends to have sex with her. It's still, like, one of the greatest clips.
Oh man, why was he bad again? I remember back at in the day when he became, you know, prime minister or whatever the fuck they have there in Italy. It was like, it was embarrassing because he was just kind of a reality TV star?
Well, he was the guy who put titties on television. Like, he had a bunch of
he was essentially like if Rupert Murdoch became president.
Oh, okay.
He owned basically the entire Italian media.
Oh, all
and
right.
Was a freaky old horny toad and was essentially a crypto fascist and member of the P2 Masonic Lodge that carried out the strategy of tension in the 70s and 80s.
Oh,
that,
damn.
Prevented the Communist Party from ever taking power in Italy.
Yeah, wow. But he did love big titties. And
he loved titties.
You got to respect that about him.
It did seem like that, like the biggest fault, or at least the one I kept hearing about, was like, man, this guy fucks too much. Which I was always just like, let him fuck. Why is this a problem?
Yeah, that seems
like that is always what ends up getting pathologized is the most epiphenomenal parts of these monsters' behavior. I mean,
right.
It's like Trump. Like, at the end of the day, the real horror of Trump after 4 years was just that he swore too much and tweeted too often.
Right, exactly. It's weird. It's just that, like, I didn't know half of the shit that you just said about him, and I was just like, oh yeah, that's a guy who had fuck parties and people were mad about it, even though it was Italy, and Italy is a fuck party.
It's just one big fuck party.
That's what I've heard.
There's no reason to believe you're wrong. There's just not that much news that comes that filters through from Italy, so we got really only just like the baseline tabloid headlines.
Yeah.
The top movies, The Mummy Returns.
Fuck yeah.
Returning at number one. A Knight's Tale, new at number two. And Bridget Jones' Diary.
Mummy Returns featuring some of the worst CGI ever committed to film in the form of The Rock's Scorpion King.
Yeah. And also the first time I ever heard the word Hotep.
Oh, wow. That's a landmark. You know, Brendan Fraser, though. Still, it's good to see him on film, no matter in what form it is. The top song, still Janet Jackson, All For You, is still the number one on the Hot 100.
Nice. And
returning in the rock songs, it's still It's Been a While by Stained.
Fuck yes.
Which spent an incredible 20 weeks at number one. So, that's a reason to defend David Chase's musical choices, because you have to remember it was 2001, which is...
It's been a while, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. One of the worst eras of music, at least...
Music, wholehearted agreement on that one.
Especially,
I was thinking about that a couple days ago. Just holy crap. Just comprehensively terrible.
There was like a period of pretty solid stuff in the mid-90s when sort of indie rock kind of came back, and then we had ska, and then we had swing, and then for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, it was all just
all new metal,
terrible new metal, and then even worse, like post grunge, post new metal, Stained type shit, where, you know, you're just sad about stuff.
Yeah, to me, the new metal was the best stuff to come out of that period, because it was at the very least hit like kind of an emotional nerve that I appreciated as a middle schooler. Whereas like the post grunge shit was the stuff that I was like, I'm not really sure who this is for.
Yeah. I mean, you had like Nickelback and Stained, where it just kind of sounded like you put a bunch of grunge bands in a blender and made it Canadian.
Yeah. And then you got your Puddle of Mud, and then you got your Trapped, who recently got into a Twitter beef with us.
Yeah. Well, they had they looked like they were about to date rape Lady Liberty in a meme, and it was really funny. That's been the Remember When machine.
All right, so that was what was going on at the time that this episode came out. So now, just to recap what our B stories are for Amor Fo, I'm just gonna read to you the Bada B stories. And since this is an episode called Amor Fo or Crazy Love, I'm doing it to the tune of Crazy in Love by Beyonce.
See, I thought Tony's, you would have gone with Paul Simon there, but
I thought about it, but I was like, no, this just is a little too esoteric. I thought like people would be like, I don't know this melody at all. Everyone knows Crazy in Love, Vince.
Oh, sure. I thought everybody knew the fucking album Graceland, but maybe
not everybody knows fucking Paul Simon's Graceland. Come on.
Isn't that,
what do you think?
It's his most famous album. Come on.
It is. It's a very good album. But the B stories are Tony's love kind of looking so crazy right now. Carm's priest got her thinking she'll stay for right now. Jackie Jr. wants to rise, but he's lazy right now. Gloria's co-worker got two tickets to Raffy right now. Melfi explains crazy love got him thinking he's fucking his mom. So those are the Bada B stories of this episode. I think they're clear. I think I've made it clear. Everyone knows what's going on.
General thoughts.
Yeah. General thoughts time. This feels kind of like, I feel like there's one guy in the writer's room of The Sopranos. Maybe it's David Chase himself, who's like watching the show transform into what The Sopranos kind of became. And he's kind of going like, come on, guys, let's not stray too far away from analyze this. Like,
but I don't know. To me, this is like one of my favorite episodes. And
sure.
And particularly like the psychoanalysis annoyed me so much less in this episode than it normally does. And there's definitely like multiple laugh out loud moments, but I think it also ends on like one of the most legitimately menacing scenes from The Sopranos. Yeah. And it ended on a high note. And for some reason, that last scene stuck with me where I haven't seen it probably in 20 years. And I really remembered almost that entire monologue he gave to Gloria at the end.
Oh, you mean the final fight scene between the two of
them? No, Patty Parisi in the car where he tells her it's not going to be cinematic. I was like, that's a pretty good line.
Yeah, that was good. Also, talking about scraping nipples off the pavement or off the leather seats, I was like, damn, how are you gonna get the nipples off?
Well, they took like probably one of the least scary characters in the show and made him scary, which was pretty impressive.
Matt, what did you think in general of this episode?
I thought it was a good. It's a good cross section, Sopranos wise. You got good bits from everybody. You got some fail lordness from AJ. You got Tony in therapy, breathing like a wounded water buffalo. You've got all of the young mob guys being morons.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Carmella pretending to care about anything other than herself. It's good.
Yeah.
I also
yeah.
like just in terms of like the evolution of television, you know, a lot of The Sopranos sort of takes place kind of before like prestige TV was really a thing. And this, like, you kind of get both. You get both sides. Like, you get the full story arc of Gloria just about like in one episode. And then
yeah.
And then in with the Jackie Jr. storyline, I feel like if this was a storyline on Fargo, it would take almost an entire season to play out. Whereas here you get, they almost complete the Jackie Jr. story arc. Like, you know he's going to get whacked or something's going to happen, and they don't quite finish it off. So it's kind of like moving from, in the first few seasons of the Sopranos, each episode they would basically complete like a whole arc. And here you had one that basically went the whole distance, and then you had one where they just cut off like the very end to give you a nice teaser for the next episode.
Well, let's talk about Jackie's storyline first then. Jackie Jr. kicks out some Latinx fellas out of a pizza parlor for doing microaggressions.
In the credits, those three guys are just listed as Cholo 1, Cholo 2, and Cholo 3, which, I don't know, first time I watched it, I didn't really pick up on the fact that those guys were supposed to be Cholos at all.
No, they were not Cholos at all. That's not what a Cholo is.
Other than the fact that, you know, he made like a taco, Jackie made a Taco Bell joke when he pulled out his piece, but.
Yeah, they were Latino, and they were just like, yeah, but a Latino gangster is a Cholo. That is not correct. You can't just be there was no long socks, there was no bald head, there was no flannel.
I think this is your classic East Coast bias at work among the show creators.
Absolutely. Yeah, they probably have a lot of writers who are in LA and they only know the word Cholo. So that's what they went with. So Jackie is trying to rise up in gangland. He and Meadow have now broken up, and Ralphie explains how Tony and Jackie Jr. rose up, which was by jacking Feach LaManna and jacking his card game, which is a character that we're going to get to know a little bit later in The Sopranos.
Oh, I didn't remember
Sopranos.
That Feach actually came back into the picture.
Yeah, Feach is the guy who gets released from prison in I think, season 4, season 5. You remember him?
Not really, but...
Well, I don't
know. Yeah, Robert Loggia.
Yeah.
Who apparently was supposed to be a season-long antagonist, sort of in a Richie Aprile sense, but then they canned him halfway through because Robert Loggia was so annoying.
That makes sense.
Do you remember that commercial
it.
Where Robert Loggia was just in like a orange juice commercial, like telling some kid to drink his orange juice?
Drink the orange juice!
That's a nice time capsule.
Your mother's right. New Minute Maid orange tangerine tastes great.
If you say so, Mr. Loggia.
Yeah.
So after Ralphie explains that, you know, this is how Jackie Sr. and Tony rose up, Jackie
you just
got
to rob the mafia to convince them to put you in the mafia.
Yeah, possibly the dumbest idea ever. And it's interesting because you're wondering whether or not Ralphie was telling him this to try to sway them to do something similar or if it was just him reminiscing. It's kind of hard to tell. But Jackie
Ralphie does a great job of being like good stepdad, bad stepdad at the same time. Like he's constantly he's the only one that treats Jackie Jr. as the moron that he is and sort of gives him the advice within that, you know, assumption, which anything else is useless advice to him because he is a dipshit. But within that, he somehow still pushes him in the wrong direction. And he also wears another like casual ascot in this episode. And I don't think I've ever seen anyone else pull off just an ascot as casual around the house wear as well as Ralphie does.
Yeah, he's, you know, as a gangster, it's like he can kind of wear whatever he wants and he still scares the shit out of me. Like, it doesn't matter how shitty his hairpiece is or if he's wearing a bolo tie. Like, the dude is just, he just exudes gangsterism and it really works, you know. Which is crazy, too, because the first time I ever saw this dude, he was fucking Cyrus from The Matrix. And I was like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get used to the fucking Cyrus being a gangster. And now I'm rewatching the show and I was like, yeah, no, I'm scared of this dude. I would not fuck with him. So Jackie has the dumbest idea and he explains it to Dino in this clip.
Gene Ponacorvo's got a car again. We could take it down right now.
What are you fucking crazy? He's with Ralph. So for all intents and purposes, that's Ralph's game.
That's even better. Fuck him and his wrenchy dishes bullshit. You know what? I think he's a fucking secret fag.
I don't know, Jackie. What if they find out that it's us?
We want them to. You know it's gonna get squashed. The worst will happen, we have to give some of it back. We pull this off. We're like free agents. We dictate the terms, not them.
Because we show balls.
Like, everyone in the show is kind of LARPing, but, you know, especially Jackie and Dino. And with Dino, Dino's definitely, like, your classic Scarface poster character in this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I like the way that he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. All we got to do is show balls, and then we get respect. And it's just...
Step one, balls.
Yeah, step one.
Step two, respect. Step three, money.
First you get the balls, then you get to show them, then you get the power. Like, the idea of them, like, all you have to do is show balls and then everyone will respect you is I mean, you know, it's a good theory. Doesn't work out so well. So it all goes horribly wrong. Jackie and Dino decide to rob Ralphie's game because, you know, it's Ralphie. So what's the worst that could happen? And so they do it right before the crank wears off. Oh, but first there's a scene this is one of my favorite scenes in the episode. It's where they're waiting from a call from Carlo, who they're calling because he has a shotgun, which is that's a good, like, hey, my standard for mafia friends is what kind of gun they have. And while they're waiting for the call, they're just watching that scene from Basic Instinct with Sharon Stone and chortling.
I showed the money shot of Basic Instinct. Like, they didn't they didn't skip that for us, which was nice, because if they did, I probably would have been like, oh man, they got me all hyped up and now I gotta go watch Basic Instinct. But nope, they showed you the part that you needed to see.
Yeah, the best part. Mm-hmm. The part that we all watched the movie for, and to be honest was greatly disappointed in when I saw it. You know, what the first time I saw it, I was like, I really thought it was going to be a lot more, you know. I thought we were going to get to see like some detail, a little bit, you know, just kind of want to, I guess what I wanted was a close up.
This was before 4K.
Yeah, I guess so. It's unfortunate though, because it's still like, what, 16 millimeter film? Come on, show a little pussy detail. That's all I want. That's what I came here for. But I have a clip of them just sitting watching Sharon Stone's pussy.
Yeah. Yeah. This one.
Come on, hurry up. Call Carlo. They show my favorite part yet?
No, I think it's coming up. Come on, dude, move over. Give me some room.
Fuck you, it's my house. Here it comes.
Yeah.
Just two horny best friends watching vaginas on television
just
together.
Just guys being dudes.
Just dudes being dudes. I love it that this is their pregame for right before they're about to do an armed robbery of a mafia card game. They're just like,
just gonna look at one of those squid each.
You had to watch it with your friends back then. You didn't have like a laptop. You could go in the corner and watch it alone. You had to see it with everybody around.
Yeah, no,
there was. It's like that whole thing was less about, you know, getting horny than it was about a thing to talk about. Did you see that lady's pussy in that movie?
Yeah,
there
yeah,
it is. I saw that.
Yep.
Yeah,
we're seeing it together.
It's a social experience, you know, and that is true. There was a time where you know, we didn't all have our individual laptops where we could look at close ups of pussies and keep them as you know, little closely held secrets. But you know, there was a time where we had to watch porn together, and that was strange time.
I remember being at a drive-in movie theater. I can't remember what the movie we were actually there to see was, but I remember that on the other screen there was Sliver, which was like the other naked Sharon Stone movie, and so we were all like trying to sneak off to see Sliver on the other drive-in screen instead of the actual movie they were supposed to be watching.
Did you see it?
Oh yeah. It's good.
Hell yeah.
It's a good movie. I mean, not as good of a movie as Basic Instinct, but definitely like a lot more Sharon Stone being naked scenes.
Remember when we all watched Monsters Ball just because Halle Berry showed her titties?
Oh, yeah.
There was also, I think, what was it? Like The Professional, where there's like the scene of Sharon Stone and Sylvester Stallone in the shower scene together. And there was like... Mm-hmm. Almost more of Sylvester Stallone in the scene than there was Sharon Stone. It was like going all the way back to his roots as a softcore porn actor.
I don't know. The Professional?
I think it was The Professional. I think it's like Sylvester
Stallone. Oh, yeah. Sharon Stone, Stallone having incredibly uncomfortable looking sex in a giant shower. Because not only are they lying on cold porcelain, but Stallone's body just looks like this horrifying... It looks like an obstacle course.
He's just like
these
covered
ripples.
In, yeah. He's covered in baby oil, like an uncomfortable amount of baby oil. And he's got those... He's got the kind of muscles that are like obviously muscles, but also weirdly asymmetrical.
You imagine getting... Like holding him. It's like, where is there any softness here? This is like having sex inside the back of a cement mixer.
No, you just have to climb him like a gnarled Joshua tree. I mean, you wouldn't have to do much climbing because he's like 5'8", but you know.
Sharon Stone also showed titties in a movie, in an Albert Brooks film called The Muse. I don't know if you guys saw that. Did you see The Muse? It was like a movie.
I remember
about
that one. I don't think I saw it, but I remember that one.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like, you know, it's an Albert Brooks comedy. And I remember her just kind of showing titties in that movie and going like, hey, Sharon, let's, I don't know. And not every movie I need to see this. Come on. Like,
well, there was a while there where she knew, you know, you want to dance with the one that brung you, you know, she knew what got her into the dance. So she was going to keep hitting it.
Yeah, she seemed super cool, but apparently she wasn't. Like, there was the famous story that the crew on Basic Instinct hated her so much that they all peed in the hot tub before her hot tub scene.
The whole crew?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, that was the story. I don't know if it was
the whole squad hitting.
They ran a train on a hot tub. All right. I like it. So back to Sopranos. The Jackie and Dino rob Ralphie's card game before the crank wears off. It goes horribly wrong, and they kill Sunshine. Mm. And then also, go ahead.
My hot take for this episode is that Sunshine had it coming because he just kept... Just saying, he just kept parroting different sayings while they're robbing him. He kept giving the shitty, like, eighth grade teacher advice that he got from a quote book. And
which is not going to work well for someone like Jackie Jr., who probably got in trouble a lot in eighth grade.
He was being epic, is what he was being. And you can't really blame anybody if they're in a high stress, tense situation with firearms for shooting someone who's getting epic.
Yeah, that's true.
I have a clip of that, actually. Just Sunshine not shutting up.
Good, son, leave him while you're looking good.
Just give it to him, Sunshine.
Victory has 100 fathers, but defeat is an orphan.
Shut up! Shut up! Stop fucking looking at me. Come on. Hurry up! Let's get the fuck out of here!
If you can keep your head while those around you can't, then you are...
The gun has already gone off, and he's still giving shitty advice.
That wasn't even the correct quote.
Of course
if it was.
You
can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs. That's from Kipling. He blew it. That's why I killed him, because he fucking got the quote wrong.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
That's a surefire way to piss Jackie Jr. off, is to misquote Kipling.
And it ends up getting Sunshine killed, but it also ends up getting Carlo killed. He gets shot right square in the forehead. And then Jackie robs a car because the getaway driver left as soon as the bullets started flying, which I thought was this is the most accurate reaction, I think, to a situation like that, because there's no fucking way that I would just be like, well, I'm just going to wait till the shooting stops. Yeah. So he leaves.
I'll just chill right here.
Yeah, I'm going to just chill, like meter's still running. And so he robs someone else's car, Jackie does, and then just leaves Dino in the lurch in probably the funniest scene ever, just in terms of, like, Jackie is such a bitch. Like, he's been a bitch this entire show, and now it's like, just, that is
his whole
epic
problem
bitchness.
Is like, he can't figure out the obviously in this gangster world, there is a time to be like a complete sociopath, like, just, you know, completely self-interested sociopath.
Yeah.
And then other times when you're like supposed to feign respect and stand up for your boys and whatnot, and he can never figure out the right times to do that, because, you know, obviously, like, if there was any time when he should have actually helped one of his boys out, it's like, you don't leave the obvious connection to you at the crime scene. And like, he's got this one guy that these other people only know as Jackie Jr.'s dumb friend. And yeah. instead of picking him up, he's like, oh no, I gotta fuck this guy. And so he takes off and basically has signed his own death warrant in that moment.
And, you know, I do enjoy watching Dino plead for his life by just asking nicely, please.
Please?
Yeah. Which, you know, could have worked. I don't know.
It seems more realistic than Sunshine's reaction. Sunshine does the thing that people in movies always seem to do that I have a hard time believing anyone in real life would do, is that, you know, you start getting all fucking indignant when someone's got a gun in your face and, you know, you start telling them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah. I'd like to think I would do that. You know what? I probably would.
Sure.
Yeah, dude, I definitely would have. And if I had been on that plane during 9/11, same shit, dude. I'd have fucked those terrorists up. Hell yeah. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Jackie escapes, and now Chris wants revenge on Jackie, and Tony is not letting him do it. And Tony ends up pressuring Ralphie to give Jackie a pass, which is a really interesting scene, because I think it is pretty clear what Tony's motivation is, but just to like drive the point home, he decides to make Ralphie feel bad for being a bad stepdad.
I didn't think that was what was happening. I thought they were both trying to pass the buck onto each other and trying to deny responsibility for having to whack the old boss's son there.
Well, they were, except for Tony clearly did not want Jackie to be whacked. And I think what Tony ends up doing,
he just didn't want to order it. I think he didn't want to be the guy.
Oh, well, he definitely didn't want to order the whacking, but he also was encouraging Ralphie to, you know, go with his gut here and giving Jackie a pass. I have a clip of Ralphie
to take ownership of whatever the decision is.
I want to give the kid a pass.
Well, I think you should go with your instincts on this, Ralph.
You do? But Furio took a hit. Chris, these are made men.
Well, make sure they respect your decision, because I'm sure you're going to do the right thing.
This is Rosalie's kid.
Well, understand if you want to give him a pass, and I'm sure everybody else will too. Hey, your decision goes the other way. The one thing you cannot do, Ralph, is blame yourself. You took this kid under your wing. You schooled him as best you could, didn't you? I think this is yours. Stupid kid was carrying it around during the holidays.
You see what I'm saying? I mean, he's totally just saying you are a shitty dad, and if you kill him, this is so on you.
I still think it's the writers trying to build the tension of, like, is Ralphie going to cop to this or not? Because he clearly just put him up to this, and then he's leaving him hanging.
Also, Tony is talking to himself about himself and to himself when he says all that stuff about how you did the best you could, you raised him as well as you could. He knows that he didn't do that with his kid, specifically AJ. And he has to have, like, they can perpetuate their self-delusions to the degree that they all reinforce each other's. And so it's like, hey, we're all doing as best we can, right? Even though none of them are. They're a bunch of lazy fucking assholes who just let their kids just do whatever and are selfish pricks.
Yeah.
There's a glimpse into, like, how the mafia works, where Jackie and Dino are like kicking up to Ralphie, and they're like, hey, this means you protect us now, right? And it's like, no, basically the mafia works is like you just keep paying other criminals until they decide that you're like indispensable enough not to kill. And
it's a pyramid scheme. Yeah, that's just like every other element of the American economy.
And Ralphie's like, you obviously haven't paid us enough money for us to give a shit about you yet, but keep doing it, keep going.
Yeah, he paid hello money is what he was like. Yeah, this money gets you a hello in public, which is that's a very expensive hello. But yeah, in fairness to Tony, when he is saying, you know, like he is talking about himself, like doing the best he could for Jackie. But in fairness to him, he did do way better for Jackie than Ralphie did, because like Ralphie was bringing him along to, like, you know, beat up random people and fucking like taking him to the mafia gym, basically, and like arming him and fucking like having him kick up to him and shit like that. Like, you know, for all Tony's faults, he was doing the best he could to make sure that Jackie wasn't, you know, getting into.
Yeah, I mean, they both were. And then, but that's like the whole point is like they're both being what they think is the good father figure. Tony being the one who tries to get this knucklehead to like go back to college and
right.
study to become a doctor, which is obviously never going to happen. And then Ralphie realizing correctly that this guy's way too dumb for that and thus trying to steer him, you know, to his best career path in the mafia, but he's also too dumb for that. And so at the end they're kind of just like, all right, well, which one of us is going to take ownership for this fucking knucklehead? And neither of them want to, so they're both trying to shove responsibility off on the other one.
Poor Jackie, he's just too dumb for this world.
Yep.
All right, so the next storyline we got here is, I think we'll just go with Carm's real quick.
I think this is a good storyline too, and another reason why The Sopranos was like ahead of its peers in television at the time. It's kind of like whenever you see someone cough up blood in a movie, like you know that they're going to die by the end of the movie. This is kind of a cousin of that where she's she's like talking
coughing
about
blood out her pussy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she's doing that. She's coughing pussy blood, but she's, you know, she's being emotional. They're showing her being hormonal and having lady problems. And in any other show, that would end in her being pregnant. And it's kind of a shock that they didn't. They gave us a twist in this one where they're like, no, this is just like a reason that she talks to her priest. And and her priest happens to be, she realizes correctly that the priest will allow her to get away with a lot more than the psychiatrist will.
The previous psychiatrist that she saw was like basically saying he's a bad person. You have to leave him and you are basically culpable and you are a party to his crimes and basically saying all the real shit that she desperately did not want to hear. And she goes to the priest knowing that that's not an option.
It's really good that like they didn't make it overt, but like the entire subtext of that scene is the priest being like, of course you can take blood money. The Catholic Church takes blood money all the time. We love blood money.
Have you ever heard of tithes? Come on.
Yeah. We invented this.
What I love though is that the priest kind of accidentally gives her a divorce out that she quickly has to cover up with one of the funnier sentences that she says in the scene. And I have a clip of that.
You made a sacred vow. Divorce is out of the question. Unless, is he abusive, your husband?
Not to me, but he is unfaithful. He's a good man, basically, but
I love, you know, unless is he abusive? Well, not to me.
He abuses other people.
Yeah. You know, he's unfaithful, but he's basically a good man. Like all of the everything she's just said is just like, no. He's a very violent person and he does cheat on me. But no. That's no reason for divorce.
And then and then he gives her advice, which is incredible, where he's like, you just have to find your line between what you can stand to profit off of and what you can't. Like you got to find the what money has he made off of being good and what money has he made off of being bad, and you just take the good part.
I guess the question is like, is it moral to live off just the interest of the blood money?
Yeah,
because I think that's okay. I think that's allowed.
Yeah, it's right? Like an endowment. If he starts an endowment, you're good. You just can't, you know, you can't buy too many things with it.
And then, of course, he tells her to go see an OBGYN.
And go see an OBGYN.
Which was good advice, which Carm takes and then goes out to dinner at Vesuvio with the girls. And this is maybe one of my favorite. There's so many good scenes in this episode, but one of my favorite is Rosalie April talking about how Hillary Clinton is a role model for mafia wives.
Yeah, the Remember When machine is almost redundant in this episode because there's like an entire Hillary scene where they all independently are like, oh yeah, that is, I guess Hillary is the real gangster.
I asked him what happened. He tells me to mind my own business.
So does she in so many words.
They broke up. Is Meadow okay?
Oh, please.
That girl is so different than I was at her age. Just rolls off her back. There's no weight loss, no sleepless nights.
Not like the grief we go through with our husbands.
That's because we married these wayos.
not just us. The president of the United States, for crying out loud. I mean, look what his wife had to put up with the blowjobs and the stained dress.
Hillary Clinton? I can't stand that woman.
I don't know. Maybe we could all take a page from her book.
What, to be humiliated in public and then walk around smiling all the time? That is so false. I would dig a hole, I would climb into it, and I would not come out.
No, you wouldn't. Liar.
Yeah.
What does Tony do? You know he cheats on you. What are you talking about?
Yeah, they're saying it like their husbands don't cheat and they don't rub it into their face constantly.
Yeah. No, it's like because they don't come to the house that's the standard.
That is the line. I mean, if they come to the house, then you're a fool. But if they just do it on a boat, maybe.
Yep. It's just like if you take some of the money from the crime, it's okay. But like one fur coat a year, not two, from the Esplanade.
All I know is she stuck by him and put up with the bullshit. And in the end, what did she do? She set up her own little thing.
She did. She took all that negative shit he gave her and spun it into gold. You gotta give her credit. She's a role model for all of us.
I mean, Hillary Clinton is a perfect role model for them, like long before many people knew it. I think The Sopranos had that nailed like way before the rest of the world.
Yeah, super early. It is. It's pretty impressive because I think history kind of ended up proving that scene way too correct in terms of like people's general feelings of Hillary Clinton, which is that she's basically a mafia wife, and
she set up
most
her own
people.
Little thing.
She set up her own little thing, her own little gangster shit, and now Gaddafi is dead or some shit.
Yeah, and then so we go from that to the obvious, like the main storyline of Tony and Gloria, which is like the main thrust of the episode,
which is wonderful. I mean, the actress who plays Gloria is. She's just incredible.
Tony has a great, this is one of the best malapropisms I think in the entire Sopranos. Obviously it's a running theme, but I think this is maybe one of the best is when Tony's talking about why he fell for Gloria in the first place, even in the midst of explaining why she's crazy.
Those eyes, those dark black eyes, when she stares at you, it's like a Spanish princess in one of those paintings, you know, a Goyim.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's not wrong. You know, the Spanish princess is definitely a Goy.
That's true. Yeah, and one thing that Goyim painted a lot of was princesses.
Yeah, Catholic princesses specifically. Yeah, no, that scene is really good, and it is, I agree with you in that, like, this episode has got like the least amount of like grading psychoanalysis. Mm-hmm. So it does definitely work, but
I think part of that is that they just wrote such a good character with Gloria that they could psychoanalyze her and it comes off interesting.
Yeah.
And she does, like, she reminds me of Lorraine Bracco in Goodfellas. Like Lorraine Bracco in Goodfellas is just like the most vocally impressive performance. Like she could definitely be like a punk singer in another life in the Goodfellas, because if you watch Goodfellas, it's all just Lorraine Bracco going full Minor Threat, like in every scene, just fucking shrieking. And Annabella Sciorra is kind of like that, but you got to get her going first, and then she just turns into this foghorn, and it's fucking incredible, this like foghorn of spite. And I have like the moment after she gets her tire slashed where they're arguing about it, which is just an incredible scene with a great button. I have that.
Why would you offer to pay for them if you didn't have a guilty fucking conscience?
About what?
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
You know what? This is fucking bullshit. I'm going home.
Oh, yeah? Well, who else would do it?
Who knows? Kids, maybe. You know what? Ruin a great fucking evening over this shit.
Kids.
I don't know. Maybe your fucking brother-in-law. Maybe Mr. Globe, then a Globe Motor, since you're America's fucking sweetheart this week.
Oh. Where the fuck do you get off? This immigrant, alcoholic, fucking probably HIV-laden slashes my tires, and you have the fucking nerve to call my life into question?
She wouldn't do it. I slapped the piss out of her last time.
Oh.
probably the line of the episode for me.
It's interesting because you're kind of wondering, she is saying, oh, did you really? And you're wondering if she's doing it judgmentally or if she's horny, you know?
Right. Like,
I'm not really sure.
Gloria is like she seems like she's the model for every Real Housewife of New Jersey, where whenever they get in an argument, it's just like this long string of insults. Like, there's that famous clip of like the prostitution whore where she flips over the table.
Prostitution whore, you are f***ing gay 19 times.
Like, that entire scene is just when Annabella Sierra gets going. And she's like, HIV-ridden prostitute.
Right. And I like, that was Tony's line. Like, as she's like, you know, on this like rampage of insults, she mentions, you know, randomly, is like, probably HIV-ridden whore. And he's like, whoa, whoa, all right, calm down. Don't imply that I have HIV. Like, he's more scared of the fact that she's saying that out loud than anything else.
It also is like part of the pattern from last episode, Pine Barrens, where they leave sort of this question hanging. Like, we never do find out who slashed Gloria's tires.
Yeah, it was probably the Russian dude.
I assumed it was.
Yeah, easily could be. Also, Tony is kind of bringing up stuff that she said in a previous scene, in a scene where he is just desperately doesn't want her to expand on the family drama that she had mentioned she was dealing with. And I have a clip of that as well.
What, that family shit you were telling me about?
Yeah.
It's okay if you don't want to talk about it. Really.
She said I can never see my niece and nephew again. Right before Christmas.
You know, we had a new Santa Claus at our Christmas party in the neighborhood. Wasn't very good.
Hannah and Seamus go to this like alternative private elementary school in Santa Monica where it's all about the children's self-esteem.
Yeah, I hate that shit.
So I happen to ask Hannah, she's in the third grade, are you going to be in the Christmas play? And she says, we don't call it the Christmas play. We call it the winter festival. So like, whatever. I don't say anything. And then Seamus says, we're not allowed to say Christmas. We call Christmas the C word. And I fucking flipped out.
What does Seamus say?
The fuck does he know he's 10?
That's so fucking funny. Just like, first of all, she's kind of having like a proto Starbucks cup culture war argument there. Yeah. But I do also love that Tony takes a long, deep breath and goes, what did Seamus say? He can't. Oh,
he's trying to convince her that he gives a shit about her family this whole scene, and then he quickly realizes that he does not.
Big mistake. So Gloria happens to randomly run into Carmela at her dealership and decides to give her a ride home. And they just have a lovely little scene together in which Carm desperately wants to brag about Meadow, but is not given the proper opening to do so, and so she just takes it.
She's not too far away, though. She's in New York City. She's at Columbia, actually.
School of Broadcasting?
No, the university. It's in the Ivy League. It's one of the top schools.
I know, I was just kidding.
Oh.
You never say that they're going to Columbia or Yale or Harvard right off the bat. You say they're studying in New Haven or fucking Cambridge. And she's, she's in New York City, which is weird that you'd say New York City when you live like 30 minutes away.
But do people not say that?
I don't know. I've never spent a ton of time in northern New Jersey.
Usually, I don't. If you're a bridge and tunneler, don't you say the city?
That's what I would think. I mean, in the Bay Area, you say the city about San Francisco. So I would assume it's...
I'm pretty sure that in Jersey and on Long Island and shit, you say the city.
That's what I would think. But then, she did the very cliche thing of saying New York City. And then when Gloria fails to ask like the expected question, she's like, you know, Columbia?
Yeah. And she's
you
like,
oh, yes. Ivy League.
So Tony gets pissed at her for, you know, showing up to his house while showing up to her work repeatedly. And then one of my favorite moments is just the juxtaposition of her. Had Tony threatening to kill Gloria with like her shitty coworker banter at the end. So I have a clip of that.
Now you can tell your shrink you ruined 8 relationships.
What do you mean?
Fucking over.
Tony!
You see, Tuesday I can take my kid to hear Raffy.
I also really loved that scene. And, you know, as often happens on this podcast, you know, someone will make mention of a musician that I'm very fond of. And then I just can't, I can't get that musician out of my head. So I too have a clip of Tony and Gloria, you know, getting into a little spat at the dealership.
All right, just give me a minute. Could you, Martin?
I just thought we could switch
days. Yeah, sure. I just got a customer coming in, all right? Tony.
Ring, 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 ring.
Don't you fucking Tony me. Are you out of your fucking mind talking to my wife?
All right.
Ring, 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 ring.
You drove her home. Then you look right into my eyes and you don't tell me?
All right, it's just normal to be curious about someone that you love's significant others.
No, it's not.
Ring, 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 ring.
It's fucking twisted.
No, it is not. Look, I don't want to argue with you. You're upset. And I understand it's on the margins for someone like you. And I'm sorry, and it'll never happen again, ever.
No shit. Now you can tell your shrink your own date relationships.
What do you mean?
Fucking over.
Ring, 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 ring.
You see, Tuesday, I can take my kid to hear Raffy.
Banana four.
You and the fucking glitching.
Oh, you know, just like sometimes you need a little topper at the end of the sure. clip. And then I just I glitch out a little bit. Let me live, Vince.
Sorry.
Let me live. Yeah, I mean, listen, I hope that kid, I hope that guy gets to take his kid to see Raffy. I mean, that is Raffy, who, by the way, I didn't know this until a few weeks ago, is like a big resistance Twitter guy.
What?
Yeah.
I had no idea. What's his?
Yeah, he's like a Trump. He's a Trump reply guy now.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Which, you know, the fucking I have nothing bad to say about Raffy.
I haven't thought about Raffy in a good 20 years, at least.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, he's got great music. He's got Banana Phone. He's got the Baby Beluga. He's just the guy does nothing but write slappers. So
the other musical reference in this episode is Jackie Jr. and Carlo, or Dino, I think, sitting around and they seem to be watching like a Vanilla Ice behind the music.
Behind the music, yeah.
And they're yelling.
Yeah, which is that was like the premiere behind the music of that time too, because we all kind of wanted to know what happened to Vanilla Ice, and it was like it was the one that kind of popularized the story of, I think it was Suge Knight hanging him upside down out of a window.
Yeah. Speaking of like coming up with their own little things, like Vanilla Ice made money off of being Vanilla Ice for, I don't know, like 2 years, and then made money off of people wondering what happened to Vanilla Ice for like the next 30.
Yeah, for the rest of his life.
And he's also like the one musician who apparently made smart investments and has just been rich this entire time. Like he never had that moment where he went bankrupt and had to sell off a bunch of shit. He
never went bankrupt?
No, he like invested smartly and has been like into real estate and like house flipping, and he's just been rich this entire time.
Even though Suge Knight stole half his royalties by hanging him upside down out of a balcony. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, he had a house flipping show. He was on what was it? Not the Surreal Life. The one with all
yes,
the celebrities.
Yes, Surreal Life.
Oh, was it the Surreal Life?
Oh, it was Surreal Life.
Yeah, where he got in a fight with like Todd Bridges, I think.
Yeah, you got your Todd Bridges there. You got Estrada. You got Vern Troyer. It was that was where Brigitte Nielsen and Flavor Flav fell in love.
Classic story.
Did he ever
fell in love with being on television? I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Did he ever do like a celebrity boxing? That feels on brand.
I don't know that he had to. He didn't have to get hit in the face. He just had to show up and be Vanilla Ice, and people would give him money.
Damn, that is a good life. I mean, except for the being Vanilla Ice part.
Yeah.
But the other shit is tight. The other shit is tight. And finally, you know, Gloria and Tony get into one final fight, In which Gloria reveals her true form. You know, the thing that they've been hinting at this entire season between these two, this relationship that is built on lust. And, you know, there's a little bit of a Freudian angle there. Well, they just come out with it straight up and she reveals her true form.
Yeah, I was kind of impressed at the restraint that it took not to put a flashback in there when she says, "Oh, poor you." Like, they just expected us to know that that was a reference mm-hmm. to Olivia, which, like, watching it now, of course, the show wouldn't, like, take the time to hold your hand. But I feel like in 2001, most shows, there would have been a producer telling them to put, like, a flashback in there just to make sure everyone got it. But
yeah, and, you know, I'm that person, Vince. If you're wondering, who would dare take that exact scene and decide to add flashback shit? It's me, bro.
Oh.
I fucking did.
Oh, perfect accidental segue.
The other night with the ties. I'm a grown man. I've had other women. What do you think? I lived in a freezer before I met you.
Fine. I'll sit back like a mute while you screw every woman out there.
Where the fuck do you get off, huh? You don't care. What do you think? You're the only one with problems? You think my life's a fucking picnic?
Oh poor you.
I didn't just meet you.
You want that lamp?
I've known you my whole fucking life.
The world is a jungle.
My mother was just like you. Bottomless black hole.
These blacks.
You're fucking crazy. You see me, you cross the street. Because you're a dangerous fuck and I don't want you in my life.
And kill me now. Go on, go into the ham. And take the carving knife.
What'd you say?
And stab me, here. Here, now, please. Stab me.
These blacks. You gonna need my wife.
Your wife never showed any interest in my jewels.
Well, my family, and I'll fucking kill you. You understand me? I'll fucking kill you.
I gave it all to your cousin Josephine. She always admired it.
You fucking bitch!
You want that lamp?
Thank you.
I mean,
that's,
it's basically
a
scene
that you discovered that Gloria was Livia.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm really good at, like, dissecting art, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like I can tell when art is trying to do something. So I decided just to, you know, make it clear that this was art and add those flashback scenes to it, you know? In case people were, like, confused about it. Because I think that's, you know, it's maybe too deep.
I didn't notice all the parallels. Viewers. I'll give you that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I notice all parallels, dude. I'm like hella smart,
and it worked out.
You point out all of the parallels. You're the like a Batman villain, Mr. Parallel.
Mr. Parallel, dude. If there's something parallel going on, I'll point it out. And you know, you may not like it. You might be like, oh, well, you think you're so smart, but yeah, I am. I got a big brain, Vince.
You got a leotard with all the Easter eggs on it.
That's right. I sure do. And I'll thank you not to snicker at my talent. But yeah, it is a great scene, and I feel a little bit bad re-editing it so it's just Livia talking about lamps and giving away jewelry, because the acting is so fantastic, and it is you know, it is kind of it's kind of a horrifying scene, because you know, you're seeing Livia's kind of id, I guess, kind of through a young person. Because a lot of times you read Livia as like just an old person complaining, you know.
And she was young once too.
Well, of course, but it's like because she's this old, like, you know, senior citizen, frail woman. There's something about her just complaining about, I wish the Lord would take me, you know, that you're like, yeah, when you're old, you want to die. That's normal. Every old person wants to die. And then seeing it come through Gloria, who's this like young, successful woman, just being like begging Tony to kill her while they're on the ground fighting, and he's got his fucking meaty paws around her neck. It's just like, fuck, this is dark, dude.
I actually wondered watching this episode whether they made Tony's hands bigger than they actually were, or if fucking Annabella Sciorra was just that small. But yeah, like his paw covers like half of her head when he chokes her.
Again, yeah, Hulk hands.
Yeah, straight up. Yeah, he's got them. You got them meaty sausage fingers. You know what he has? He has the meat, like the shape of like a little person's hands. You know what I mean? He's got like giant dwarf hands, and you know they're nubby, but
and they also they do look like overstuffed sausages. There's not a lot of definition. They kind of just look like big like water balloon fingers.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and she was, you know, about to get choked out by just, you know, fucking Edward Sausage Hands.
Yeah.
And then, she lives, and then Melfi processes with Tony, which is, again, is good.
I feel like a shrink should maybe not be like, oh, yeah, she was trying to get you to beat her up.
Yeah, at this point, I think we've done enough of these episodes to say that Melfi is very unprofessional and is not like she kind of pretends to be like, hey, you know, there's a lot of doctor patient confidentiality, but she'll just go ahead and say, you know, exactly what the issue is. I mean, you know, she's given away a lot of personal information about Gloria.
She's an old gossip, just like they all are.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to do least favorite?
Yeah, let's do it. What was your favorite?
I mean, my biggest laugh lines were the Raffi and him saying he slapped the shit out of her as his explanation for why it couldn't have been her. But yeah, I've talked about it already. But yeah, that end scene of Patsy Parisi saying it's not going to be cinematic, that felt like a note that we maybe hadn't seen on The Sopranos up until that point.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was, and then also ending it with just a shot of him saying on the phone after coming from the grocery store, like, oh, I got the shells, to show that he's just kind of this like innocuous, you know, normal guy that you wouldn't expect to just, you know, a few hours earlier threaten to murder a woman in cold blood. It's pretty, pretty great. I would say favorite scene, probably the Raffi scene, and then I also did really enjoy Jackie explaining the worst heist in the world to the other guy.
You mean Ralphie explaining?
No, Jackie explaining.
Oh, Jackie pitching it. Yeah.
Yeah, Jackie pitching the heist. But then pointing out that like one of the biggest problems he had with Ralphi was that he asked him to clean the dishes before they went in the dishwasher, because it's just like, to him, that was like the biggest sign of disrespect. Like, yeah. you would never ask a maid guy to clean the dishes out before you put them in the dishwasher because it clogs. And it's like, nah, I don't think you, I think you have a huge misconception about what life in the mafia is going to be like. And doesn't matter how big you are, you gotta rinse the dishes before you put them in the fucking dishwasher.
Yeah, when he tells Christopher that we're with Ralphi, he means that I actually live with Ralphi in the same house. He didn't mean like as a crew.
Exactly. And then a least favorite, I would probably say, Carm and Meadow at the museum crying at paintings. If I have to pick a least favorite, sure, probably that. I saw nothing in that scene worth keeping, other than seeing Meadow go goth, which I really appreciated.
Matt?
My favorite, bros being dudes watching Beaver together. Can't beat that. That's a Dudes Rock Mount Rushmore scene, for sure.
Yeah.
And then I guess the scene with the priest is my least favorite, just because you know what she's going to be getting out of this, and it just sort of moves the thematic cable. It doesn't do anything you're not expecting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, least favorite, I think I had to go with the three cholos, just, you know, based on the simple fact that they clearly were not cholos. And and it's hard fair. It's hard to know what they were. I guess he was just taking offense to the smoking in the store. It was like that part seemed like they cut something out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were also speaking Spanish, so they probably cut out like, hey, we speak English in America, you know, especially around that time. But yeah, What about like a alternate title? I think our malapropism corner and alternate title are kind of the same for me. Cause like, you know, instead of a morpho, he just calls it a mofo, which is right. It's a great malapropism, but it's also literally the entire episode is just motherfucking. It's just it's a story about Tony fucking his mother. Yeah.
I don't have any alternate titles. I don't know. Suicide by Cop. Who knows?
Yeah, no, that's good too. And yeah, in general, if I had to like rate this episode with like a grade, let's say solid B+.
Yeah, solid B+.
Yeah, that's fair. I would say. What about you, Matt? What grade would you give this episode?
I think that's about right. I mean, I like any of the ones where someone gets shot and multiple people get shot.
Yeah.
And so it's got that going for it. So yeah, I can't go lower than like a B if somebody's getting murked, honestly. So yeah, B+.
That's right. No matter what, every episode is a solid B+. Go ahead, write us an email being mad about it. Fuck you. Every episode, solid B+. I probably shouldn't say fuck you to the audience every episode. I mean,
we say it in spirit.
In spirit, yeah. But really, what I mean is thank you. Thank you for listening to another episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Great episode. Matt Chrisman, thank you so much for coming on and talking Sopranos with us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Where can people find you on the old internet?
My handle is Kushbomb with a C. Mm-hmm. Podcast is Chapo Trap House. Twitch stream is /Chapo Trap House. That's about it. OnlyFans coming soon.
Hell yeah. Oh, I'm excited to subscribe for feet pics on your OnlyFans.
Oh man. If I actually did that, I'm imagining the people who would pay for them.
They would.
They're the worst feet on earth. Some sicko's hearing that and getting off already.
I can, it's weird, but I already have an image of them. That's strange. I don't know why. In my head, I'm like, I know exactly what kind of foot we're looking at. And just the right amount of like toe knuckle hair. It is.
Well, nobody's finding out until until I eventually do just say fuck it and have a OnlyFans.
Yeah, so this is a tease.
Yeah, yeah. We're teasing that future OnlyFans for Matt Chrisman. So be ready for that in the new year, I'll say. I'm giving you a deadline. All right, everyone. Patreon.com/Frotcast for all the bonus episodes of our regular scheduled podcast in which we talk about other things, not just Sopranos. We talk about movies and television, and sometimes we just talk about, you know, OnlyFans and feet pics. So Patreon.com/Frotcast. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Let us know what you think about whatever specific thing we got wrong in The Sopranos and how we could be better at knowing about it, even though... who cares? So, frotcast@gmail.com. Please email us. Vince, what is the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much again for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing. Don't
stop. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.